fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Moroccan striker Youssef En-Nesyri, who made history on Sunday for the Spanish football club Leganés. The 21-year-old En-Nesyri became the first Leganés player to score a La Liga hat trick in a 3-0 home win against Real Betis. En-Nesyri scored the opener in the 22nd minute, added another goal just before halftime, and completed his hat trick at the hour mark. Speaking after the match, En-Nesyri said, and I quote, "It wasn't a personal success, rather a collective team effort, and scoring a hat trick will always be one to remember." The young Moroccan player added, and I quote, "The match ball will definitely find a place at home, but getting all 3 points is very important for us." With those 3 points, Leganés now has 29 points total, putting the team in 11th place in Spain's 20-team La Liga. Barcelona leads with 51 points from 23 matches, followed by Real Madrid with 45 points. Now, getting back to Youssef En-Nesyri, he joined Leganés from the Spanish second division club Malaga in August 2018, and he now has scored 7 goals in his last 5 league matches for the club. Youssef En-Nesyri mentioned getting the match ball after his hat trick. Well, he posted a photo on Instagram in the Leganés locker room, holding the match ball and surrounded by happy teammates. Some sad African football news now. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers former Nigeria defender and football administrator Taiwo Ogunjobi, who died Monday at the age of 65 of an undisclosed illness. Until his death, Ogunjobi was chairman of the Osun State Football Association. He also served as secretary general of the then Nigeria Football Association between 2002 and 2005. It's now known as the Nigeria Football Federation. Taiwo Ogunjobi's death came 35 years to the day after he made his international debut for Nigeria against Morocco in an Olympic qualifier, which in 1984 was not restricted to under 23 players. During his playing days, Ogunjobi also captained the Abadan-based club Shooting Stars. Taiwo Ogunjobi also was twice a Nigeria Football Federation presidential candidate, losing both times to the incumbent Amaju Pinnock. The NFF posted the following on its Twitter account: "Our prayers are with his family, relatives, and the football family in Nigeria." Now let's go to Uganda, where fans of the traditional dodgeball-like game of Kwipaina are hoping to see it one day become an Olympic sport. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this feature by Magumi Davis Rakawinj.
Kids gather in Imperial in Kampala suburb to play their favorite game, Kwipaina. They have used old rugs to make a tennis-sized ball they will use. Parents have gathered around to watch their kids play. One of the kids playing is 12-year-old Jovian Altaya, a primary 5 pupil.
I like the game of Kwipaina because I play it at school and at home. My friends come and meet me and I play it and I like it.
For centuries in Uganda and other parts of Africa, young children as well as adults have engaged in this game. In both the traditional Kwipaina and the modified one, the game requires an open space with 2 persons at the opposite side, known as shooters, and 1 person or several in the center will be dodging the ball. Each dodge earns points for the one in the center, while each hit also earns for the shooter. Misk plays in the air at Uganda Museum, where the game is played with the new rules. One of the players here is 23-year-old Janet Komugisha, a social worker.
People have fun when you're playing it. It's okay, it's like you're running, I don't know, exercising. You have fun. I don't know, I like it, it's fun. Oh, when we were young, we used to play Kwepe now. Those games where people used to fold balls in banana fibers and you dodge yourselves. Yeah, we had so much fun. So it being brought back in a modern way is more interesting and fun.
According to the standard rules, there must be a team of at least five who play four rounds each for 15 minutes. The court is 10 meters by 4 for the juniors and 14 meters by 4 for seniors. There are also two umpires that officiate the game. The game also has a new name, Cheza, a Swahili name which means to play. Another player here is Halima Kabambale, a marketing agent. Kabambale hopes one day she'll be able to represent Uganda at the international scene in the game of Kwepena.
I think it brings out who we really are. So for a child that is, let me say, 10 years, for them to want to play Kwepena, it's from the love they have from within. I would want to play rugby, but rugby is not African like our own. I want to play a game I have grown up playing in my backyard, and I'm taking it on international scene.
The man behind the move to make people like Kabambare's dream of playing chess a game at the Olympics or other international avenues is 25-year-old Simon Peter Tumukunde.
Kwepena is a game that is played everywhere across Uganda, but also everywhere across Africa, but we just call it different names. If you go to Kenya, they call it Kati. If you go to Tanzania, they call it Rede. If you go to Rwanda, they call it Akohejuri. In South Sudan, it's called Boruboru. You know, Zimbabwe, I think they call it Maflau. So it is everywhere across Africa, and it is one of those games that we believe can grow with the right innovation and attention and value added to it.
Since 2013, Tumukunde has been working with a team of volunteers to promote the game across the country. For now, Tumukunde says he intends to organize an international tournament involving countries in East Africa.
There's a ball that does good.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In African athletics, let's give Sunny Side of Sports salutes to Ethiopia's Yomif Kijelcha and Kenya's Michael Saruni, who both came very, very close to setting new world indoor records at the Millrose Games in New York City over the weekend. In the men's mile, Kijelcha clocked 3 minutes and 48.46 seconds, just 1/100th of a second from equaling the mark set by Morocco's Hisham El Garouj 22 years ago. Speaking after the race, Kijelcha said, and I quote, "I will try the indoor mile again this year, and I'm confident I can break the record." And while he didn't set a new world indoor record, Yomif Kijelcha did set a new Ethiopian record. Meanwhile, in the men's 800 meters race at the Millrose Games, Michael Saruni was the winner in 1 minute and 43.98 seconds. Saruni became just the second athlete in history to better 1 minute and 44 seconds for that distance indoors after fellow Kenyan and world indoor record holder Wilson Kipketer. Kip Kuter set the world indoor mark of 1 minute and 42.67 seconds in 1997. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The energetic Andy Edwards will be packing his bag soon for coverage of another indoor athletics meet, Saturday's Muller Grand Prix in Birmingham, England. Before going to Birmingham, though, energetic Andy had a chance to catch up with a British ultramarathon runner who has fond memories of an inaugural five-day race in Kenya. Here's Andy.
I'm sitting in a North London cafe, in fact, it's my regular haunt for breakfast, with someone who, and he laughs when I say, I think of him as Ultra Pete. His full name is Pete Ryan, who's a British sports trainer. That's what he does for a living, his day job, locally in North London. But he has a very interesting career so far as an ultra runner, does all sorts of races which I might find crazy as a what I call more regular runner. But in particular interest for us, in the summer, he did the inaugural Nairobi Ultra Marathon. Quite an event, 5 days, and well, that's one of the things we're going to be talking to Pete about. So Pete, why did you go to Kenya to run? Okay, it's the first one, ultra running, but you say it's over 230 kilometers, 5 days. What motivated you to do that? Because most people would think, what on earth are you doing?
I suppose I'm obsessed with pushing myself to the limit in whatever it is I do. So the wonderful thing about ultra runs is you will eventually reach a point in which you really have to dig deep to go further on. Now, you can't get a better environment than through some of the conservancies in Kenya. The wildlife you come across, the conservation that you're raising money for, the anti-poaching, it's just a beautiful, beautiful run, and I couldn't say no to the challenge.
I know from talking to you that wildlife, conservation, you've done ultra races all over the world. That's a very important factor for you. So what was special about the Kenya Ultra?
So I've done runs before in Peru through the Amazon, through the Namibian desert as well. And the company that organises all of these runs, they reached out to me and said, look, Pete, we're thinking of doing a run here in Kenya to raise money for this. How would you fancy it? And again, as I say, that to me is just like ticking every box: animals, beautiful terrain, and raising money for that fan. I couldn't say no to that. So that was the inspiration there.
And what animals in particular were you raising money for, or was it just Kenyan wildlife in general?
So the race itself is done by a company called Beyond the Ultimate, and it's in partnership with Save the Rhino. So the main thing is Rhino Conservancy out there, but at the same time it's raising money for the rangers themselves to buy clothes, food and things like that. Rather than just the anti-poaching, it's actually focusing on the rangers who give up their lives for that.
Interesting you talk about rangers, because I remember interviewing a Kenyan elite runner, and he'd done well in a marathon I was covering several years ago. I think it was maybe Prague Marathon, and it turned out he had a day job, and he said, I'm a wildlife ranger and trained by British Army, as it happened, and he was combining being, you know, a top-class runner running something like 2:10 for the marathon, but he was doing his full service as a ranger, including night sentry duty and everything, and going out into, well, what I would call the bush, and making sure the poachers weren't active.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what was happening here. So as we were running along, the route was constantly being manned by the rangers themselves. So in the daytime, half were looking after the runners, and then of a nighttime, the half that were looking after us would then go about their duties of the night. You know, it was amazing to see. You could see it happening all as you were going on.
Where did the race, Nairobi Ultra, start? And was it a loop course? You say 5 days, 230K. Just give us a picture of what you took in as the route.
We started off in one of the conservancies. I'm just trying to find the name of it now. We start in the Lua Wildlife Conservancy, and we finish on the equator line in Old Pajeta Conservancy. And through that, we ran through five different conservancies as well. So we saw different sorts of terrain, animals. We saw everything. It was incredible.
Oh, that's interesting. So five different conservancies, and you're seeing different animals. So just give us a little kind of word picture of what animals you saw. I mean, everybody thinks, well, Africa, there's a lot of them about.
So on day one, you were running along. As soon as we started off running, we were round by a zebra, running around everywhere. There was one of the days that I actually ran through a herd of zebra. Giraffe everywhere, rhinos, elephants. There were lions in the distance as well, to which we were told to keep well back from. Hyenas, everything you can think of and more. It was just everything was there. And you got so close to these animals that you just couldn't experience in any other way. A safari, you're in a car, you're in a safe thing. Here, you are exposed to it all, and that was the exciting part of the adventure.
Were there any dangerous moments? You talk about lions, tigers, etc.
There could have been, but it was so well organized and so well manned by the rangers. They knew where all the animals were. A few slipped through every now and then, but we had helicopters and planes flying overhead to keep a track on where everything was. But the potential is there, but it was so well handled.
You've done other ultras, and in talking beforehand, you said you've been an ultra runner, actually, only for 3 years, and you're 32, obviously a fit guy because you're a sports trainer, that's your work. Where else have you raced, and was there always a connection with wildlife conservation in your choice of venue?
So the first run that I trained for was for another ultra, but that was in Peru, and that was in the Amazon jungle there. Now, again, you're talking animals, you've got animals everywhere around you. So that was the big highlight for me. I've always been an animal boy. I'm obsessed with animals. My arms are covered in tattoos of animals. So that's a real trigger point for me. So that was the real biting point for me. It was the potential of seeing going to the Amazon and everything there. And that's always been the selling point for me.
What about your other ultra, your fellow ultra runners? How big or small was the field? Because it's not something. It's not like doing a 10K road race. You know, 232 kilometers, 5 days. I presume you've got to have really special preparation just to get through it.
To be honest, it's more. Don't get me wrong. There comes the physical element of being able to do it, but I believe everyone can do it. I think the ultra running actually comes down to more of a mental game, because it's really is just a point of every single step forward is going to get you closer to the end. And that's the thing that I love about this, is that there's people there of all different shapes and sizes and heights and weights, that it eventually must come down to one point, which is the mental capacity to carry yourself through. Because as I say, everyone reaches a point on these runs where you do break down, where your fitness level isn't there, your body can't keep up, but yet you still carry on. That's the addictive part of this. So all the people that I know that do these runs, we all have something in common, and it's that ability to push ourselves mentally and just carry on and carry on and carry on.
That's really fascinating. Well, Pete Ryan, Ultra Pete, as I may call you, we look forward to hearing, I presume, this may not be the last time you do an ultra in Africa. You got plans for more?
I would easily go back to Kenya and do the same run again, but I've got plans now to do two more ultras, one more in the Arctic Circle, and then another one in Japan. So another 2 5-dayers.
Well, I think I need to lie down for that. Pete Ryan, thank you very much for talking to us. Fascinating insight into the Nairobi Ultra Marathon, the first one, and there's more to come. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, energetic Andy Edwards, for that interview with Ultra Pete Ryan. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And if our Voice of America listeners check out my Facebook page on this Tuesday, they'll see a photo of Iron Mike Mbonye and Olumide Oyedeji, who we heard from on Monday's show. Olumide played 3 seasons in the National Basketball Association, and he continues to use basketball as a medium for change in his philanthropy. Olumide's Youth Foundation was established in 2000, and since then has helped more than 45,000 young people all over the world. Olumide, if you're listening in this evening, here's another Sunny Side of Sports salute coming your way. In NBA action Monday night, James Harden and the Houston Rockets defeated another Texas-based club, the Dallas Mavericks, by 16 points. The AP's Adam Spillane reports from Houston, Texas.
James Harden's streak of 30-point games has reached 30 after he scored 31 in the Houston Rockets' 120-104 win over the Dallas Mavericks. Harden had just 20 points with less than 3 minutes to play, but he hit a three, then another three, then a pair of free throws, and then he finally hit a 30-footer with 52.9 seconds left to put him over the mark. Harden says the late-game flurry wasn't about the streak.
I was worried about winning. They were making, you know, shots, they were coming back. Cut the lead to, I think, 10 or 9 points, something like that. So I just wanted to get the proper shots.
Chris Paul added 17 points and 11 assists for the Rockets, who improved to 33-23.
At the end of the day, the object is to win games. You know what I mean? We never want to compromise a win or anything like that. And I think James has done a great job of that. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, the name of the game is to win, and that's what we did.
Luka Doncic led Dallas with 21 points as the Mavs fall to 26-30. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Toronto, Canada, where the Toronto Raptors pulled out a narrow 2-point victory against the visiting Brooklyn Nets. The AP's John Letherby reports from Toronto.
Toronto edged Brooklyn 127-125 in a last-possession winning basket. With 22 seconds left, the Raptors moved it down the floor. A Kyle Lowry pass to Kawhi Leonard on the right elbow, banking in off the glass with only 4 seconds remaining. D'Angelo Russell's jump shot in the final Nets possession bounced off the rim. The winning bucket from Leonard against one of the best shot-blocking teams in the Eastern Conference.
I really didn't think about it at the time. I just went to a spot where I seen some space, and I shot the ball.
Leonard finishing with a game-high 30 points. Mark Gasol, in his home debut, had 16 points off the bench. Russell posted his own double-double, leading Brooklyn with 28 points and 14 assists. John Letherby, Toronto.
Thanks, John. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. My friend Austin Okon-Akpan, head of sports at Channels Television in Nigeria, likes to say that we got to test Russell Westbrook for alien DNA because he's such a great NBA player. Austin, if you're listening tonight, we got to keep testing Westbrook for alien DNA. Westbrook set an NBA record with his 10th consecutive triple-double. 21 points, 14 rebounds, and 11 assists on Monday night to help lead the Oklahoma City Thunder to a 120-111 victory over the Portland Trailblazers. Westbrook broke a tie with Wilt Chamberlain for triple-doubles. Test him for alien DNA, Russell Westbrook. And that wraps up the February 12th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nashwan Kali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudour, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll discuss measles as countries such as Madagascar and the United States are grappling with the disease. For your questions or comments, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigeria's presidential election is set for February 16th. President Muhammadu Buhari of the APC and top challenger Atiku Abubakar of the PDPs are both Fulani Muslims. A discussion on what's at stake on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
There is clothing that can help cool you down on hot days, and of course there are a number of clothing options for keeping warm on colder days. Now researchers at the University of Maryland say they have developed a new fabric that not only can cool or warm, but can automatically sense conditions to determine which mode to activate. On hot days, the fabric opens up and allows body heat to escape. On cold days, it limits the amount of heat that is allowed to pass through it, allowing the body to retain heat. The researchers say their new fabric is made with a special yarn that consists of fibers of two different synthetic materials. The yarn is then coated with carbon nanotubes, which is considered to be a unique type of lightweight and conductive metal. The developers admit that more research must be conducted before the fabric can be made available commercially. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.